Gates to Pentagon. We got to get this family on a budget.
We must reform how and what we buy, meaning a fundamental overhaul of our approach to procurement, acquisition, and contracting.
We're going to shop. Whoa.
Can the Pentagon spending diseases be cured or just procured? Washington's most usual business, as usual. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. It's Monday, April 6th. I'm John Hockenberry. Adora Udoji is away, spending time with her new baby. I just sound like I'm dying. I'm actually not contagious. Coming up this hour, we'll discuss President Obama's visit to Istanbul, Turkey. We'll hear about rescue efforts in Italy, and we'll take a closer look, as we mentioned there at the top, at the budget cuts in next year's defense budget. Those stories coming up, but first, headlines. Thousands of people left homeless by an earthquake in Italy are waking up this morning in makeshift camps. Francisco Rocha of the Italian Red Cross says they're working to help.
We are estimating that the number is around 50,000. And so it's a very, very important number. We are organizing with field kitchen, tents, and other items, beds, to organize their life for the next days.
Nearly 180 people were killed, 1,500 injured in the massive tremor. The U.S. Geological Survey reports a magnitude 6.3. It's the last day in Europe for President Obama. He's talking to college students at a town hall meeting in Istanbul. He said yesterday that he wants to turn the page in the relationship between Muslims and Americans.
Sometimes it suggests that America has become selfish and crass, or that we don't care about the world beyond us. And I'm here to tell you that that's not the country that I know, and it's not the country that I love.
Earlier today, the president met with religious leaders and toured Istanbul's famed Blue Mosque. Mark Garrison, what else is out there?
In Islamabad, Pakistani President Asif Ali Zardari says his country needs, quote, unconditional support from the U.S. if it's going to conquer militants on its territory. His comments come after meeting with the U.S. Special Envoy Richard Holbrooke and Admiral Mike Mullen. It's the first visit by American officials since the Obama administration laid out its strategy for the war in Afghanistan last month. Cuban President Raul Castro met with six members of Congress yesterday. It's his first face-to-face conversation with U.S. leaders since he became president last year. The delegation visited Havana to figure out ways to improve U.S.-Cuban relations. No details of the discussions were released.
This just in, it's actually Tuesday, April 7th. I said it was Monday, April 6th, which just about goes with my sort of congested head this morning. The Carolina Tar Heels claimed victory over the Michigan State Spartans in the NCAA basketball championship last night in Detroit. It wasn't even close. 89-72. The Tar Heels led the whole way. In the women's championship, UConn and Louisville square off in the final tonight. The Dow fell 0.5% yesterday to finish at 79.76. The S&P begins trading this morning at 8:35. Futures point to a lower opening. So why does an itch itch? It's a familiar sensation, but it is actually a mysterious bit of science, and we're going to talk about it. What is the itch in your life that you need scratched? Say you're in Minnesota and you're just about done with this Al Franken, Norm Coleman thing. Are you anxious about filing your taxes? Did that produce an allergic reaction? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. Also, a cold remedy, somebody, please.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. A lot for you this morning on the program. It is Tuesday, April 7th, and, I'm looking for cold remedies, as you can definitely hear. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. Not that that is the lead story. We're also going to be talking about the science of the itch. It's actually an important issue in neuroscience, and figuring out exactly why we itch and why scratches work is an interesting bit of science we're going to be talking about later. So it's the Itchy and Scratchy Show here on The Takeaway. If you have something that you absolutely have to scratch, an itch that you'd like to talk about, either literally or figuratively, call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. It's a $500 billion itch at the Pentagon. The Defense Secretary Robert Gates talked about it in a news briefing yesterday.
We must rebalance this department's programs in order to institutionalize and finance our capabilities to fight the wars we are in today and the scenarios we are most likely to face in the years ahead, while at the same time providing a hedge against other risks and contingencies.
It looks like Robert Gates, who is currently the head of the Pentagon right now, is going to be fighting and doing the hard bargaining on the Obama defense budget, which, again, is $500 billion or more. But the defense secretary outlined in an unusual briefing yesterday a number of cuts in procurement programs and a number of increases in Pentagon personnel programs. Here he is again.
We must reform how and what we buy, meaning a fundamental overhaul of our approach to procurement, acquisition, and contracting.
Later on in the program, the numbers and the politics of a Pentagon build-down in a 21st century Obama administration. But now we go to the president, who is in Istanbul, Turkey. We're joined by Mithat Berekat, who's a former anchor and correspondent for CNN Turkey, an offshoot of CNN. He now is working for Pusula TV, which is a private television network. Pusula, by the way, means compass in Turkish. Mithat, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Hello. So Istanbul, the city of all kinds of history, there at the bridge between Europe and Asia, Barack Obama is meeting with students and meeting with people of all kinds in the community there in Turkey. Describe the feeling on the street of the presence of Barack Obama and Michelle Obama there in that city.
I can easily say that to start with. I mean, the President of the United States of America, for the first time, I can say that he conquered the hearts and souls of the Turkish people, ordinary people. At the moment, he's just finishing his talk with one-on-one talk with the Turkish university students, and then he'll be leaving afterwards. But I think in his 2 days visit, first in the capital Ankara, then in Istanbul, he really, in a way, conquered all the hearts. And he said everything that's usual. I mean, it was like sort of like the first time that I can see the Turkish people are really very fond of the U.S. president. I think he changed the image of America in Turkey totally.
Now, were these hearts hard to change? Was it an uphill battle for him? Or were people really hoping to fall in love at first sight here?
I think that was really hard because of the Bush administration's policies towards Iraq, especially. This is just nearby Turkey. I think there was a rising anti-Americanism feeling in the society. But it's so interesting that the Turkish public, I was in the streets yesterday and today as well, talking to Turks, ordinary Turks, I saw that they didn't see the Barack Obama as a U.S. president, as an American. They saw him someone from them, someone from Islamic world, someone different. Actually, one anecdote I think is very interesting. I was interviewing a middle-aged lady. I asked how she found the U.S. president. She started by saying, "Our President Obama." I mean, she said like that in Turkish, "Our President Obama." I think this was a slip of the tongue, but this slip of the tongue shows that how sympathetic the Turkish people, how sort of warm the Turks found the new U.S. president. Actually, he's been the fifth president visiting Turkey, Turkish Republic in history, but I think he's the one that really conquered all the hearts. And his visit to Blue Mosque, I mean, that was a big hit. For the first time, a U.S. president was in the Blue Mosque. That's the biggest mosque in Istanbul, in Turkey, and it's still being used as a mosque. And being there, showing respect to Islam, showing respect to Turkish people, and talking to every sort of person in the street or in the politics, I think this really changed the whole image of America in Turkey.
Well, Mithat Berekat, a former anchor and correspondent for CNN Turk, an offshoot of CNN, he now works for Pusula, which is the Compass Network in Turkey. We should remind people that Obama in Turkey is a departure for traditional president's overtures to the Middle East region. Normally, the situation is go to Saudi Arabia, go to Israel, and then everyone else after that. Dealing with Turks on the street who are calling him openly their president is certainly, at least potentially, a departure for the U.S. administration. Here's Barack Obama speaking in Turkey.
The world will be what you make of it. You can choose to build new bridges instead of building new walls. You can choose to put aside long-standing divisions in pursuit of lasting peace. You can choose to advance a prosperity that is shared by all people and not just the wealthy few. And I want you to know that in these endeavors, you will find a partner and a supporter and a friend in the United States of America.
Barack Obama speaking in Turkey. Of course, the number one issue there is Turkey's membership in the European Union, which Barack Obama says he supports. Controversy in the EU about that. And of course, there'll be many political battles going forward. Joining us now is David Willey, who's the BBC Rome correspondent, who was in L'Aquila, Italy yesterday, focusing on the rescue effort that is now going on in Italy in the aftermath of yesterday's earthquake, 6.3 on the Richter scale, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. David Willey, good morning.
Good morning.
So what's going on this morning? The death toll, of course, has risen, but it seems that the response has been pretty robust there in Italy.
Yes, it has. There's just been two big aftershocks, one of at 4.7 on the Richter scale, which caused a bit more debris, to fall from some of the damaged buildings in L'Aquila. I'm now here in Rome, and the government response, I think, has been quite vigorous. They set up a tented camp city on the outskirts of L'Aquila, but the death toll has been climbing in past hours. They brought out the last living survivor they brought out from the rubble was a young woman of 24 who had been pinned to her bed by a concrete beam, and she was rescued during the night. But hope is fading that they're going to find any more survivors in the ruins.
Describe the government's reaction here. Silvio Berlusconi has canceled a trip to Moscow. He's been surveying the region by helicopter. It seems as though the government's response is very, very different from, of course, the tragic lack of response that characterized the horrible earthquake back in the 1980s.
Yes, Mr. Berlusconi is very proactive. He said he's going back again today to L'Aquila to hold a press conference in about an hour's time. He's been surveying the damage in a helicopter, and he has got a lot of emergency funds allocated for immediate relief. The thing is, though, that the people of L'Aquila, they've revised the estimate downwards about the number of homeless. They were saying more than 50,000. Some reports even said 100,000 homeless yesterday. That appears to have been an exaggeration. The feeling this morning is that about one in seven of the inhabitants, the 68,000 inhabitants of L'Aquila, will have to leave their homes. For the moment, they seem to prefer sleeping in their cars near their homes, even if they are not allowed to back inside because of the danger of falling masonry, rather than take up the offer of the government, which has requisitioned 4,000 hotel rooms in seaside resorts along the Adriatic coast. People don't appear very willing to take up this government offer.
So what are scientists saying about the activity of the faults in this area? One seismologist notably predicted this earthquake, but I gather there isn't a consensus among scientists in Italy as to what's going to be happening in the future around this particular fault line that's very active this morning, as you describe.
No, there is disagreement among in the scientific community. The scientist who actually predicted the earthquake predicted it would take place at another town called Sulmona, about 20 or 30 kilometers away. But he measured radon gas, which was coming out of the mountains, and he works in a research center, an underground research center in the Gran Sasso, which is one of the biggest, the highest mountains in central Italy. And they've had some quite interesting results. I don't think that the main body of scientific opinion, however, is that you can predict earthquakes. What you can do is to build buildings which resist earthquakes. And of course, Italy has a long experience in this. What's rather interesting is that the ancient Romans built rather well. They were the ones who invented mortar and cement. And their buildings, like the Colosseum in Rome, have proved down the centuries very resistant to earthquakes, whereas some of the shoddy buildings put up in the 1960s and 1970s used poor quality cement.
Right.
And
well,
they're the ones which have been falling down.
A verdict. Rome stands in the wake of the earthquake. David Willey, BBC Rome correspondent, in the wake of the L'Aquila earthquake yesterday, 6.3 on the Richter scale. The rescue continues. Thank you, David.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.